as users or as dealers are white folks. Only 13.5% of them are black. But once you start looking at the arrest statistics, you see 37% of all the people arrested for drug violations are black. 42% of all those in federal prison for drug violations are black. 60% of all those in state prisons for drug violations are black. And this has caused even the FBI to finally take notice of it. And 2 years ago, they came out in their uniform crime report with what I think is one of the saddest statements I ever heard in my life. It says, and this is a paraphrase, it says that a young couple giving birth to a black male baby today has an expectation of 1 in 3 that child will spend time in prison. 1 in 3.
Wow.
Think of that. You know, if we only changed one word in that sentence, if we changed black male baby to white male baby, we would have ended the war 30 years ago because we wouldn't have stood.
Where did you find that other information, Jack? Could you refer me to that again, where the one that says the percentage of black people who are in prison and percentage of white people who use these substances?
It's the Federal Household Survey that tells us how many people out there use drugs or sell the drugs and their demographics.
Sorry.
The other stats come from the crime source book and the let me see, and certainly from the things like the FBI uniform crime reports, federal prison statistics.
Sounds like you've really researched this stuff quite thoroughly. Can I ask another question? I kind of want to get into the psychology a bit. I'm wondering, how can you lead us through the process? I'm sure you've seen this. You've been, an officer you were an officer for a long time. What is the process of a good cop going bad? I think most people probably go into law enforcement with good intentions. How does it happen that someone with good intentions in the beginning ends up with, in such a quandary, they're in such, that afterwards they become so corrupt? How does that happen?
Well, let me preface this by saying, I don't mean to be down on cops. I think a good cop is the best thing in the world. And I'm not saying that the majority of police in this country are bad cops, but there's enough of them to go around, believe me. And what makes them go bad? Well, one of the things that can make a good cop or somebody on the line go bad is the temptation. There is so much temptation out there, and you don't even have to do something wrong. I mean, all you got to do is just look the other way, just not act instead of actually doing an act. Give you an idea of what I'm talking about. New Jersey State Police, there was a trooper there that told the story of he was driving down the highway doing his job, uniform guy in a marked car, and he stopped a car at night, and on the back seat is a valise, just one driver in the car, nobody else. Out on the turnpike, police in the back seat with a couple $100,000 in the valise, and nothing else in the car. And he says to the driver, "What's with all the money here in this bag in the back?" And the driver says, "What money? There's no money back there." So the trooper says, "Look, this money. What money? What? How did this get here?" And the guy says, "What money? I don't see any money." Meaning, of course, that if the trooper wanted to just take that and dump it in the trunk of his car and drive away, nothing would be said. Now, that is a tremendous, tremendous amount of temptation.
Well,
every time when narcotic squads hit many houses, there's usually just two or three people there. And the temptation is very great when you're might be seizing $1 million to say, well, we only seized $900,000.
Wow.
There's so much money out there to be made, and there's so much to do with it. Let me tell you, when I was when I was working, we worked very closely with New York City, and I was working with the Manhattan Narcotics Squad, the group that got the French connections and stuff, heroin. And if you remember, about a year after that great French connection bust, all that heroin went back out on the street because it was all stolen out of the evidence locker.
Right.
And there's corruption starts with things like, it starts with the idea of a war on drugs, and then you get a zero tolerance attitude that comes out of prohibition. You know, we are not going to tolerate drug use in any way. We're not going, and the police think, well, our job is to take these people off the street, no matter what. And if we arrest them and they're back on the street, they used to complain all the time, they would be back on the street before we could even finish the reports. And it's true, they probably were back on the street before we could finish the reports. But the reason for that was, you know, we have a bail in this country, and that's supposed to be a good thing. But it was known as revolving door justice back then. And there was a street justice that was applied to stop this. And the street justice that was applied was, well, we know that they've been doing this, you know, that we know these guys are drug dealers. We see them every day on the block. They see what they're doing. We know that they're doing it. And if we got them and it looks like they're going to get out because of some technicality that we could cover by just bending what happened a little bit, say something a little different than what happened and everything will be fine. Well, then that starts to become what happens. And people start lying on the stand about the drug arrest. And it gets so blatant that you've heard of the term testaline. Now, testaline, that's not a term from your coast, by the way. That's back here on the East Coast. And that's not a term that was cooked up by some defense attorney. That's a term that is used by police in narcotics units when they're talking about each other. As I say, in New York, this part of the country is called test line. On your coast, around Los Angeles, it's called joining the Liars Club.
Reverend, can I get in here and get a question
please.
Quick? Jack, what I have to ask you, and it's kind of personal, but it, like, after spending that much time as an undercover officer and having those, you know, the racial angle or the poor and being an officer and busting those people and knowing that you were, like, a part of that system, do you grapple with that on, like, a karmic level? Like, do you ever have sleepless nights or, like, does
sure
it...
I do. Sure I do, and it's one of the reasons I'm doing what I'm doing is I would like to stop that from happening to other young officers out there today. You know, if we could end drug prohibition, we could end so much of this harms.
Yeah.
We could end the corruption of police officers. We could end cops getting killed out there fighting this useless war.
Mm-hmm.
We could end the fact of... if we legalized drugs today, there wouldn't be anyone shooting each other in the streets to control that little corner of this very lucrative market tomorrow. You know, all these drive-by shootings and all this stuff, that's all drug dealers shooting other drug dealers. And, of course, if they miss the person they're shooting at, they get some little kid behind them. There's just so much harm that's going on because of this stuff, and it could all end if we just ended drug prohibition.
So have you yourself ever been a target of retribution from the powers to be who don't want to see law enforcement getting, like, knowing the facts and maybe going against the system?
No,
like,
have
you ever been targeted or harassed or threatened or anything?
No,
like
I haven't.
That?
As a matter of fact, I don't know of anybody in LEAP that's been targeted after we became a member of this organization, because there is power in banding together. Once people realize that you have a whole organization behind you, it doesn't pay them too much to go after an individual.
Right on. I'm so happy to hear that. And honestly, I've got to say that when I saw LEAP, because we have brochures at the store,
mm-hmm.
from LEAP at the store Holy Smoke.
Yes.
And when I was reading through it, like, honestly, that you got to be one of my heroes for pulling that off in the States. Because here we have a war on drugs, but down there it's just the war on drugs is... There's a lot more killing going on. Like, the battlefield is a little more fierce than up here. And to have a law enforcement officer come out and set this up and get it rolling, to me, it's like a missionary in, like, hostile jungle, or, you know what I mean? Like, it's really brave to do that in the States, I find. And so I'd just like to say personal thanks. Like, that's so awesome.
Yeah, right on. It's good work that you're doing, Jack.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's there's about 2,000 people involved in it, so, and we're growing every day. So it's not just one or two of us.
Yeah.
And there's not much really courageous about it. The courageous ones are the ones like Gil Puder, who did all this work while he was still a law enforcement officer.
He's one of my other heroes.
Yeah, well, you know, Gil's on our homepage. All of our work is dedicated to his.
Yeah.
The work he did. He was a great guy. And those are the people who are really courageous, who are putting their jobs on the line every day to say, we're wrong and we've got to stop it.
Yeah.
It's different. Like with me, I didn't start this until I retired.
Mm-hmm.
So, and there's stuff about it too that you were asking me about sleepless nights and things. Let me tell you, I started working undercover in narcotics in 1970. By 1973, just 3 years into that job, I had already decided, after living with these people on the street and seeing that they're not some sort of demons, they're just people like us.
Yeah.
You know?
Regular
they're,
folks.
They're exactly like us. And they were going to prison mainly because they wanted to put something in their body I didn't want to put in my body. Now, there's something wrong with that picture now as I look back. But at any rate, in 1973, I had already decided the only way that we're going to actually lower the incidence of drug addiction in this country would be if we ended drug prohibition and legalized drugs.
Yeah.
Now, I thought that in 73, but I went on working in narcotics for another 9 years, I guess, after I decided that. So, you know, somebody might ask, why would you do that when you already felt like it's a losing battle, you know, and we shouldn't be doing it?
Yeah.
And there's a lot of reasons, and they're not courageous.
Okay.
Most of them are pretty bad reasons. One reason that I did that was I had my own addictions, after all. My addiction, one of them, was to the adrenaline rush. And there is definitely an adrenaline rush when you're out there working in narcotics. The work can be unbelievably exciting, and it's especially when you're getting up with the larger groups the more important groups that are distributing drugs, because they tend to be some pretty smart people, and it can be dangerous, and it's a real adrenaline rush to work with them.
Yeah.
But then there was also, I did a little bit of rationalization there that, well, I had seen what some of my colleagues had done out there, how they might arrest people that hadn't been caught with drugs, and make it look like they had been caught with drugs, or lie on the stand or whatever. And I just felt like, well, at least if I'm here doing this, I know that when somebody gets arrested, it's because they really committed a crime. And if they get found guilty, it's because they went to court and I testified and told what really happened, and some jury found them guilty. I'm not going to change my testimony in order to get them found guilty.
Yeah.
So it's a very, very complicated thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about it is, we shouldn't be doing this with our police officers. You know, police are really good at protecting you from me, or me from the Reverend, maybe.
Yeah.
But we're absolutely worthless at protecting an individual from themselves. That shouldn't be up to us. That should never be left to law enforcement. That should be up to an individual's free choice, with maybe the advice and consent of their family, their friends, their religious leaders, social workers, maybe medical practitioners, anybody but the police.
Yeah.
Jack, I want to take another break here again, and maybe we could go to just another song, Dusty, and
I got
another...
it all dialed up.
Right on.
This is NWA, Fight the Power.
Yeah, best trained, best
Excellent.
Educated.
This is going good, Jack.
Best prepared troops refuse to fight. Matter of fact, it's safe to say that they would rather switch than fight.
Music hitting your heart, cause I know you got soul.
Hey,
listen, if you're missing, y'all, swinging while I'm singing.
Hey,
giving what you're getting, knowing what I'm knowing, while the black band's sweating in the rhythm I'm rolling. Gotta give us what we want. Gotta give us what we need.
Hey,
our freedom of speech is freedom of death.
We got to fight the powers that be. Fight the power. Fight the power. Fight the power.
As the rhythm's designed to bounce with calcium, that's the
rhyme.
Designed to fill your mind now that you realize the prize arrives. We got to pump the stuff to make you tough. From the heart, it's a start, a work of art to revolutionize, make a change, something strange.
People, people,
we are the same. No, we're not the same, cause we don't know the game. What we need is awareness. We can't get careless.
You say, what is this?
Yeah. I'm beloved. Let's get down to business. Mental self-defense of fitness.
Don't rest the show. You got to go with what you know.
To make everybody see. In order to fight the powers that be.
Fight the power. 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 Fight the power.
most. Elvis was a hero to most, but he never meant to me. Yes, he's straight out racist. The sucker was simple and plain.
Motherfucking in, John Wayne.
Cause I'm black and I'm proud. I'm ready, I'm hyped, cause I'm amped. Most of my heroes don't appear in no stamp. Sample, look back, you look and find nothing but rednecks for 400 years if you check.
Don't worry, be happy.
Was a number one champ. Damn, if I said you could slap me right here. Get it.
Let's get this party started right.
Right on.
Come on.
What we got to say.
Yeah.
Power to the people, no delay. Make everybody see. In order to fight the powers that be.
Fight the power.
Check this out, man.
Okay, talk to me about the future of Public Enemy.
Future of Public Enemy got a f***.
Okay, welcome back, you guys. That was Niggers with Attitude, and that was Fight the System. No, Fight the Power.
Fight the Power.
Yeah.
So we're back with Jack and Dustin. You want to take it?
I actually can't. I can't remember here what we were just talking about.
Oh, it's funny how a lot of times the conversations that we have when we're off the air are sometimes even you know seem really interesting and even important kind of additions to the whole interview in some way. But I want to get to the point and I guess ask Jack what. You know, what do you guys have envisioned for like a positive model to change some of these horrible things that we've been talking about?
What we envision is just ending the war on drugs, which means one thing. It means legalizing drugs, legalizing all drugs, but not legalizing them so we all go out and party, legalizing them so that we can control and regulate them and keep them out of the hands of our children, at least until our children are old enough to make a rational decision about using such things. And, of course, the first question I'm asked every time I go out to talk is, well... Won't everybody start using drugs if we legalize them? And the answer to that is no, absolutely not. If we look around the world, there's really good indicators that that won't happen. For instance, if you look at the Netherlands, you see, in the Netherlands, drugs aren't legal there, by the way, but they might as well be legal. They've decriminalized since 1976. You can go in a coffee shop and buy hashish or marijuana, 5 grams of it every time you walk through the door, as long as you're an adult, and you can either smoke it there or put it in a doggy bag and take it with you. Nobody cares. The police in the Netherlands have actually gotten written notice that they won't arrest anyone for possession or use of drugs. So drugs might as well be legal there. And some U.S. scientists went over there and did a study, a survey to determine how many of their 10th graders in Holland have ever used marijuana. They found out that 28% of them have used marijuana. Then they came back and they did the same survey on our kids in the United States, where you got to admit we are just a little bit more harsh on marijuana use. They found that 41% of our kids have tried it. So the scientists couldn't quite square that in their mind. They went over to Amsterdam and they talked to the Netherlands version of the drug czar, who is their minister of health. And they asked him, how can this be? 28% here where drugs are might as well be legal, and 41% where it's the devil's own weed in the United States. And I think his answer was right on. He said, you know, I think what we've managed to do in Holland is we've managed to make pot boring. And what he meant by this is that once you're an adult, you can go into this coffee shop, get all you want. There, and an adult over there is 18 years old. And that means that the kids who are 14 years old, which is the entry level for smoking pot in the United States, the 14-year-olds don't decide to use drugs at that age. They figure they'll wait until they're 18. And if they wait till they're 18, far less amount of them will ever choose to use drugs. So the drug czar over there pointed out that in the Netherlands, drug use for soft drugs is just a little less than 50% per capita drug use in the United States. And for hard drugs, it's about 25% the per capita use in the United States. Everything gets better when the drugs aren't, you know, you don't have this terrible prohibition. Social indicators over there, they have per capita spending on drug enforcement in the Netherlands is $27 per capita. Here it's about $82 per capita. Their homicide rate is one-fifth our homicide rate. And it's not because they're harsher on the people in their communities. They arrest and incarcerate 77 people per 100,000. You got any idea how much the United States arrests and incarcerates? 714 per 100,000.
Oh, God.
Over about nine times as many people. And yet we have so much more problems. So, no, people wouldn't just go out and start using drugs. That's a fallacy. But many other things would happen, good things. As I said, we wouldn't have people shooting each other in the streets over these drugs. Just think, when was the last time you saw in the newspaper about one Budweiser distributor shooting out with another one by their local tavern with alcohol? They don't do that. But in the streets, when something is illegal, they don't have a choice to take a person to court to fight over who's going to distribute in a given area. The only option they have is to pull out a gun and shoot people. There wouldn't be any crimes committed to obtain drugs if we legalized drugs, or very few, because if drugs were legal, the prices would drop down to almost nothing, and people could afford to buy them if they felt that they still needed to take them. Also, they wouldn't have to go to criminals to buy their drugs. That means that their life wouldn't be in total chaos all the time. You would just have somebody who had a drug habit instead of somebody who was a criminal and dealing with other criminals all the time. You wouldn't have AIDS and hepatitis passed by sharing needles because if drugs were legal, we'd be able to give people needles and they wouldn't have to pass on these terrible diseases.
I think that I can speak for both Dustin and myself when I say that we really appreciate you being on the show tonight, Jack, and sharing your experiences with us. And I think, you know, it's really amazing. And regardless of your denial of this earlier, I think it's very cool.
Thank you. Let me just mention my website. Can I?
Please plug away.
Yeah, you can find us at www.leap.cc.com. It's CC. Leap.cc, and anybody can join us. You don't have to be in law enforcement. We had so many people who weren't in law enforcement who said roughly what you said, Reverend, that they love what we're doing and they'd really like to support us, that we created a group called Friends of Leap. Nice. And anyone can join. Doesn't cost you a penny. All you're doing is you're saying, I like what's going on here.
Nice. I'm joining tomorrow.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, for sure.
And thanks for the invitation to come on, guys.
Yeah, where are you right now?
I'm at my home in Boston, so it's, for me, it's
2:30
in the morning.
Oh, my God. Thank you so much for staying up late.
And you're welcome.
If you're ever out this way, it's a beautiful place where we live, and you and your family are welcome to come.
Where
and
is
stay
it?
Here. It's in the mountains in the southern part of British Columbia.
I was in Victoria last year.
Okay, well, if you were to go halfway between Victoria and Calgary, we were right in the mountains, the Selkirk Mountains. Absolutely beautiful. So
well,
if you're ever out this way, come on up.
Thank you.
Reverend, it's been good.
It was a great interview.
Yeah, great interview. Good having you online here.
Yeah, and thanks again to Jack Cole from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition for being on the show. And again, his website is www.leap.cc.
Yeah.
And I'm going to let you go and take the rest of the show.
Yeah. Blessings. Blessings, Jack.
Thank you, Dustin. Thank you.
Bye.
Okay, listeners. That was, wait a second, have I been talking the whole time without a mic on? Oh my God, that's so hilarious. I forgot to turn my mic on, didn't I? Okay, that was quite funny. I'm sure you were probably wondering what the hell is going on. But yeah, that'll really make for some interesting radio. We'll go to a tune right now. Oh my God. It can be tricky in here when you're doing the techie stuff and then you're, you know. Okay, just one sec. Here's someone on. Caller? Hello?
Hello.
Hi.
Are you on air right now?
I'm on air right now. Do you realize I didn't have my mic thing on?
Really?
Well, I don't know. Could you guys hear me?
I could hear you, yeah. I wonder if
I don't think our audience can hear me, but I'm not sure. We'll see.
Wow.
That won't affect the... Well, no, it might. I don't know. We'll see, Dan. I mean, Reverend, that's so
well,
nice. So
well,
what's happening?
Hey? Eh?
What's happening?
Well, I don't... I mean, I don't know. I just thought I would call you back and... I was hoping that you'd have a song on, but I just wanted to make sure that I didn't cut Jack off there, because I realized after I had hung up, and this is the first time that we've done a conference call, that that the call probably depends on me having my phone, and then I hung up. And so
No, it was fine. It was perfect.
Okay. But you're still on the air, so...
Yeah, I'm going to go to a tune here. I can't even remember what it is, man. I must be tired. Because that's the first time I've ever forgotten to turn up the dial on a mic.
Well, that's okay. I think that we let Jack do a lot of the talking.
Yeah.
And that was really important. I think that he had a lot of very interesting things to say, regardless of whether or not your mic was on. So.
Yeah.
Thanks
for that. Okay. We're gonna go to a tune. And what's happening? Are you gonna come back or?
Oh, you mean after the tune?
Yeah.
Well, if you'd like me to, why don't you put on a tune and we'll talk.
Okay, cool. Here we go.
Happy New Year, y'all. It's 1996. How y'all gonna assume this motherfucker?
I don't hear you. Yoo-hoo! I'm
know if y'all know that some of the members up here in the band been together since about 1956. Then a lot of them came here in the 60s.
Whoa. Relax, relax.
Then there were some others that came along in the 70s, y'all. A couple more came in the 80s. And now we're in the 90s.
A dope dog.
All the way to the end of the millennium, y'all. And beyond. Funkadelic, y'all. Funkadelic. Parliament. Custom Coast Guard dope dog, nicknamed Bustum. Like most dope sniffing dogs, he's got a habit, trained to have the habit. Pick up the tracks of the traffickers and track them like a rabbit up the coastline.
Canine
control substance retriever, receivers of the Golden Nose Award for leading to the cash, cashing in on the stash. Now he's in line for his issue of the booty. Never do he do a line in the line of duty. He's a dope dog.
A dope dog.
A U.S. Custom Coast Guard dope dog. Keen sense of smell. Tracking the telltale trails of cartel dope boats.
Dope boats.
Big dope.
Big dope.
Never a gram, OZ, kilo, too low key. Gotta be tons of P-blow. Bales of lumbo. While other dogs sniffing one another's tail, he can track the profit from a dope sale straight to the stink account. Big bank.
Big bank.
Bagging online the dirty money, not stinking. As the wind blows, he get a sniff. He take a whiff. He just follow his nose. Old Mac Uncle had some drugs. C-I-A-I-O. And with those drugs, he borrowed some arms.
C-I-A-I-O.
There was a bang bang here and a snort snort there. Here a bang, there a snort, bang and snorts everywhere.
Lord.
Omac Uncle starts a war. C-I-A-I-O. And the war on drugs is hell on a dope dog nose. It smells where the nose goes when the doors close. And the dealer wanna hide the dope in the booty,
up the ass,
in the twat,
in the pussy,
in the squat. Make the dog sniff the bowel, foul as they fart in his face. Damn, for a shitty half gram.
A dope dog.
An undercover narc with a part. He took a bite out of crap. Posing as a CNI dog. He bit the blind. The man with the cane made of coke. As sure as the dope boats float, the media goes comatose. Unrelated over-the-counter overdose. Now become drug-related.
Drug-related. aided and abetted by a lot of apprehension and indifference. The bigger the headache, the bigger the pill. Y'all can take your medicine now, cause you're gonna be ill when I tell you the deal on dope. There is more profit in pretending that we're stopping it than selling it. CIAIO. And the war on drugs is hell on a dope dog nose. It smells where the nose goes when the doors close. And the dealer wanna hide the dope in the booty, in the twat,
in the pussy,
in the squat. Make the dog sniff the bowel, foul as they fart in his face. Damn, for a shitty half gram.
A dope dog.
An undercover narc with a part. He took a bite out of crack. Posing as a CNI dog. He bit the blind. The man with the cane made of coke. As sure as the dope boats float, the media goes comatose. Unrelated over-the-counter overdose. Now become drug-related.
Drug-related.
Aided and abetted by a lot of apprehension and indifference. The bigger the headache, the bigger the pill. Y'all can take your medicine now. Cause you're gonna be ill when I tell you the deal on dope. There is more profit in pretending that we're stopping it than selling it.
Oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early light?
Welcome to Station Rebel. Mother Earth is pregnant for the third time, for we have knocked her up. I have tasted the maggots in the mind of the universe. I was not offended, for I knew I had to rise above it all or drown in my own shit. Maggot brain is a state of mind, and then the condition and position of your ass. Free your mind. Free your mind. Free your mind. The kingdom of heaven is within.
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 Welcome to the mothership. 1996, y'all. Are you ready? Are you ready? We are one nation under a motherfucking groove. Michael Hampton! Michael Hampton! Michael Hampton! Funkadelic! Funkadelic!
All right, listeners, sorry to cut you off a bit there, but that was, you got it, P-Funk Live 1996, U.S. Customs Coast Guard Dope Dog. That's a pretty, pretty awesome tune, I must admit. Those poor dogs, I always feel bad for those poor dogs. That are like, they're forced to, they don't know what they're doing. They're just sniffing out the bone, whatever that is, you know? And these poor dogs who are made to travel around in vans and travel around cooped up. And the only time they get out is when they're sniffing around your car or sniffing around your crotch or sniffing. That's the only time they ever get to get out. And I don't know. That's cruelty to animals to make those poor dogs part of the war on drugs. Now, in the news, I've got some news items here. Might as well do them since I printed them out and everything. Daryl Hannah, you might remember, she was in Kill Bill. She's urged politicians to legalize marijuana and magic mushrooms because
the drugs open people's minds. The Kill Bill star has called for substances which are derived from nature to be made legal because she believes they have educational values. Hannah, 44, says, "I'm afraid of chemical-based drugs, but the ones derived directly from nature concern me less. Things like mushrooms, peyote, marijuana shouldn't be illegal." You don't want people to operate heavy machinery while they're on those things, but I have no problem with their use. It's ridiculous that something can be illegal when it can be used to open minds. Hallucinogens open all of your senses. They can actually be quite educational and result in epiphanies. So that's pretty awesome. I follow along her way of thinking, too, that something in its natural form, Mother Nature intends the dosage and intends the trip, and we don't need to synthesize it and use harsh chemicals to make it into a white powder. You know, that's just too much. Here's a news story from Ottawa. Bad muffler leads to pot bust. Police made a surprise roadside drug arrest after pulling over a very noisy car on the Queensway Tuesday night. Ottawa police noticed the small car traveling westbound on the 417 in Bronson due to the deafening sound caused by its failing exhaust system. When they pulled over the ear-splitting auto, they noticed two large garbage bags filled with more than $33,000 worth of marijuana. Police arrested the driver and his passenger. Charges are pending. So if we see $33,000 worth of marijuana, that was probably like a QP, you know? If you broke it down into bong hits and sold them for $10 each, that's how much it'd be worth. But this is one of the things you've got to look out for, listeners, if you're going to be transporting large amounts of cannabis. Part of the highway safety code or whatever is that you can be pulled over for vehicle integrity. So if you're driving around with, like, you know, busted out windshields and headlights that don't work and mufflers that are like a B-52 bomber, you will get pulled over. So don't smuggle nothing if you're in a vehicle that's not up to snuff. That is for sure. Now, it was Saturday night. There was a gig over at the Nectaris. Bold Monkey, or as we know him, Dylan the Busker. My favorite busker of the season, for sure. And I'm just going to randomly pick a track off his CD and we'll play a number from that. Hope he has safe travels and may his voice resound wherever he is. Oh, we're having temperamental CD problems here. Just one sec. Come on. No, it's not going to do it. Okay, we'll do the last news story, and then we'll play a tune, and then we're off. Now, Canada, you... You go down to the co-op, you buy some organic food, you're feeling pretty good about what you think about organic foods, but our government is up to a whole bunch of shenanigans. Canada backs Terminator seeds. An international moratorium on the use of one of the world's most controversial GM food technologies may be broken today if the Canadian government gets seed sterilization backed at a UN meeting. Leaked documents seen by The Guardian show that Canada wants all governments to accept the testing and commercialization of, quote, Terminator, unquote, crop varieties. These are genetically engineered to produce only infertile seeds which farmers cannot replant. Jointly patented by the GM company Monsanto and the U.S. government, the technology was condemned in the late 1990s by many African and Asian governments who called for a permanent ban. Monsanto and other GM companies, which were developing similar technologies, voluntarily pulled out of research after concerns were also raised about the Terminator genes spreading to non-GM crops, and international outrage that poor farmers would not be able to use seeds from their crops, as they have always done. But leaked instructions to Canadian government negotiators at the Bangkok meeting of the subsidiary body on scientific, technical, and technological advice, a group which advises the UN's Convention on Biological Diversity, show that Canada will request today that all countries open their doors to the technology. The papers leaked to the environment group ETC also show that the Canadian government will attack an official UN report critical of the potential impact of Terminator seeds on small farmers and Indigenous peoples. The report recommends that governments prohibit the technology. The Canadian government team in Bangkok was last night unavailable for comment. How convenient. Terminator technology, of course, is a heinous manipulation of the gifts of Mother Nature for a seed to be grown and a seed to be planted and complete a full cycle. This cuts it off so that the farmer has to buy seeds every year. To think that the Canadian government would push this on the poor agricultural countries in the world and on poor farmers and Indigenous peoples is a heinous crime against humanity, and our government's part of it. So if you want to speak out against this, I would recommend you write to the Department of Agriculture and write to the Canadian government, write to Paul Martin and say, look, I don't want to sell seeds to a poor farmer in another country when they can't replant them. I don't want to be a part of that breaking of the like blessings of nature. So, yeah, I've always been opposed to any tinkering. Maybe hybrids, because that just relies on a good eye of the plant. But like altering genes and stuff to me is just too much. I can't cope. I think it's evil. Whenever I think of Terminator seeds, I think of Arnold Schwarzenegger with, like, the one red eye, you know? Like, you will not plant a seed. It will not grow. You know, some kind of crazy science fiction future. We were talking about racial profiling in drug investigations. Here's Malcolm X's last speech.
No Negro leaders have fought for civil rights. They have begged the white man for civil rights. They have begged the white man for freedom. And anytime you beg another man to set you free, you will never be free. Freedom is something that you have to do for yourselves. And until the American Negro lets the white man know that we are really, really ready and willing to pay the price that is necessary for freedom, our people will always be walking around here second-class citizens, or what you call 20th century slaves.
What price are you talking about, sir?
The price of freedom is death.
We declare our right on this earth to be a man, to be a human being, to be respected as a human being, to be given the rights of a human being in this society, on this earth, in this day, which we intend to bring into existence by any means.
About the first third of the audience shouted, come out of my pocket, come out of my pocket. And I heard my husband say, everything is all right, everything is all right. And someone about third or so that was seated in about the third row stood up, and I heard shots. And I saw people crawling on the floor. And so I got down too. But then when I was looking out and I saw someone look in amazement to the front, I knew they had shot my husband.
Whites can help us, but they can't join us. There can be no black-white unity until there is first some black unity. We cannot think of being acceptable to others until we have first proven acceptable to ourselves. Concerning nonviolence, it is criminal to teach a man not to defend himself when he is the constant victim of brutal attacks. There are problems in the community. Some of those examples of those problems are the vices that destroy the moral fiber in our community. Drunkenness, drug addiction, prostitution, organized crime that robs the Negro community of probably 90% of its economic potential and moral potential. One of my reasons for going out on the limb, as I have, is to try and make white people be shocked awake to some of their senses, because if they don't awake, they're going to find out that this little Negro that they thought was passive has become a roaring, uncontrollable lion right at their doorstep, not at their doorstep, inside their house, in their bed, in their kitchen, in their attic, in their basement. And if you know that in time, you can do something about it.
The Drug Truth Network, it's the 420 Drug War News. Of late, many major papers in Canada have been declaring that Canada now is the leading supplier of marijuana to the United States.
Welcome back. You're listening to Kootenai Co-op Radio, 93.5 FM CGLY, broadcasting live in Nelson and over the worldwide mycelium on www.kootenaicooperadio.com. It's almost hard to say www. It just sounds like W. Bush. But anyway, how can a letter be so cursed? But anyway, if you're listening at Kootenai Lake, it's probably getting close to 1 in the morning. You're listening at 96.5 FM. And if you're up in Argenta, you're probably in bed now, because most Argentan people are hardworking folk and get to bed early so they can get up and do good things in the world. No, it just blows my mind that that little community gets the radio station. There's some big hearts up there and some amazing, amazing people who are, you know, the shining lights for sure. People of Argenta, I love you. Okay, we're gonna play a tune here. This is Dance Hall Vibes. You got it. It's another Freestylers. I love these guys, and I'm not afraid to admit it.
Forgotten, I done taught the whole wide world, my friend, and mash up the whole lot written.
one, it just simply called the vibes. I just designed this here one to keep the dance all alive. Love to see all the girls, them whining and diving, and all the rude boys, them scamming.
Said, it's a powerful thing, my friend, not a baby.